This is dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, hitting firewalls, ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on Bergen Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me do my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source code, ISO, RAM, SIP.
Hello, welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 130, airing today, and this is January 10th, 2006. Yeah, I can't count today, it's late. We're going to do a old school type of episode here. I'm Black Ratchet, and we have with us today Dr. Zygmunt.
How's everybody doing?
Good stuff, good stuff. Strom's not here. Strom's getting prepared to head off on a wild and woolly trip. He's going out on winter break, going to head down to Acapulco or something, and I don't know, do something.
Lucky devil.
Yeah. Actually, he's probably, I'm not sure if he wants me to drop it on air, so I won't do it, but he's headed someplace colder than, much colder than Los Angeles, and probably colder than myself right now. It's actually hit a bit of a warm spot in Boston. It was almost 50 today. We were in shock.
Yeah, it was freezing here in Florida. I mean, it was like 70 degrees.
70 degrees. I'd kill for it to be 70 degrees.
I saw snow once. You know, it happens every now and then in not Florida, needless to say.
It snowed in Florida before, I believe.
It has to have only happened once, if that. We know we always have like frost warnings, but I don't ever see like I can't build a snowman ever.
Hmm. Well, I doubt it's going to be ever in Florida enough to build a snowman. Just one of those things. Now, at least you don't have like New England. Like you wake up and you think it's going to be a nice day out. You throw open the window, and you just see it snowing out, and you're like, what the hell? Well, the housekeeping, for those of you who actually pay attention to the archives, like most of our listeners, episode 128 or 129 has not been posted. Strom's lazy. No, Strom isn't lazy. Strom's had, like, tons of work to do, and he's been quite busy, so I can't really fault him for that. And normally I'd pick up the slack, but I've moved, and a little more on that in my personal hacking stories. Therefore, there hasn't been...
coming from the school of, Hack TV.
School of Hack TV, yeah, there we go. Oh, man, Stank's going to get pissed off at us, you know, or something. He's going to be like, dude, where are the archives? I don't think he's ever done that. Well, at least the stuff that I remember, he's usually pretty good about the archives. Unlike
me,
I just
sort of
flubbed right through it. Yeah.
You're going to get him up soon.
Yeah, we're going to get him up. We're recording this Monday night. We're not live, by the way. I don't think we mentioned that. And as you can tell, this is why Dr. Zygmunt's on, because he's not playing receptionist screening the phone calls.
And I don't even have to wear a skirt.
But you look so sexy in a skirt.
Hey.
you just make my wet toes tingle.
Well, you know what it is? I just don't have the legs for it anymore.
Oh, you gave up shaving?
I don't think I want to keep talking about this.
Anyway, so we're taping this Monday night. I am getting all the episodes, and they will all be up Tuesday, and we would all just like to apologize profusely. And just look on the bright side. You get, four and a half hours of pure BinRev radio. I mean, that's like four and a half hours of crack. It's like liquid joy.
Wow.
Audio joy. Audio? Oh, aureal joy. I don't know. I don't know how you call it.
Yeah.
Listening, amazing listening pleasure.
nice. What lucky fans.
I know, it's amazing. You should all be thanking us. Anyway, we all apologize profusely, and just this hopefully it won't happen again. And we everything seemed to happen combined with the holidays and myself moving and Strom having to do like massive consulting work and hard drives failing on him and all kinds of crazy stuff. So it's nobody's fault. If anything, I'd like to take up and take responsibility for it. So we will get that fixed as soon as humanly possible.
Good stuff.
Good stuff indeed. Shall we go into the email? Do you have any announcements and housekeeping stuff?
Not really any housekeeping stuff. I think it's time for some email.
I think it is. So let's go in the email theme here. Oh man, we're just going to use that as the email theme from now on. It's going to be the Dr. Zygmunt Singers. Anyway, we got two emails this week from our friend Talz, T-A-L-Z. And we're just going to sort of... we'll do the first one and we'll comment on it, and then we'll do the second one. The second one sounds really cool. I just want to put that out there. So just deal with the first one if you don't like it. Our first email tonight. So, hey, I'd just like to say how much I love the show and enjoying listening to it on my PSP. I'm not sure if you have the same, but over here in Scotland, we have bus stops that show trailers of movies with multiple choice buttons to see different scenes or trailers. Well, I was in the bus yesterday, so I didn't get a great look at it, but these run Windows XP. I saw it reboot several times, and each time bringing up the desktop with a minimized command line screen, presumably trying to launch the program to play the trailers. Oh well, I just thought I'd mention it. I wonder if someone opened it or something. Back to studying for my exams that start next week. Smiley face. I don't even know what the heck the colon S is, whatever that is. Wish you all a happy new year, Talz. So, wow, yeah, Talz, we have nothing like that in the United States.
Well, actually, I've seen there's a Georgia in Atlanta on MARTA. The trains have something that's similar to it. You can't select what you want to watch, but they have, like, I think they have news that plays on one, and they have a couple of other channels, and you actually can tune a radio to listen to the same frequency.
Oh, hot damn. Why doesn't the MBTA have cool stuff like that?
Because you guys are always striking. No, that's New York. Never mind.
That's New York, yeah. Thank God the MBTA doesn't strike. I'd be, like, hosed. I'd be, like, stranded at home going to...
What do you think that command line starting up is? If I was guessing, I would say it's some sort of bash, not bash, oh man, some sort of batch script that's being executed that's going to set up, you know, whatever needs to be running normally. If I was guessing, that's what my guess would be.
I can almost guarantee it's a batch script. Probably what it is it's a, well, I'm just assuming here, it's probably some type of login script that I assume it must have network access in some way, shape, or form, I would assume. It's probably just something that runs right at startup, whether it probably would be logon.bat or login script, and I think that executes before the... actually, no, I'm not going to say that out loud, because I don't think it does that. It executes fairly early, and it does it all automatically, and it should start up relatively good. Of course, it could just be something in the start menu, because, you know, programmers are lazy. So
yeah, it could.
Yeah. Yeah, MBT has nothing like that. I think it was pretty humorous. We have all these new buses that have like these really cool computer terminals in there, and they're all like GPS enabled and all kinds of crazy stuff. And I was reading the Boston Herald a couple of weeks ago. I was reading someone over the shoulder, someone reading the Boston Herald a couple of weeks ago, and apparently people are stealing the GPS units.
Oh wow.
Oh man, I just gotta say, ouch!
Hey, you know,
I didn't
actually,
really.
It brings up an interesting question. If we turn something like public transportation into an outlet for advertising, can we start charging less for public transportation? Like maybe even have free public transportation that in exchange, you know, they play advertisements.
Yeah, okay. Sure they will.
You never know.
Well,
I mean.
That's what would happen if like stuff followed logic, but with the whole like real world happening, I that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Good point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at the stuff. I mean, I'm not sure what you have down in Florida, but like Boston, we're just like plastered with inside the subway. You got advertisements outside the buses. You got advertisements in the subway station. You got advertisement. I mean, if you go down to South Station, which is one of our two main commuter rail hubs, you go into the main foyer and it's this huge like three, four story just open foyer, and it's just hanging advertisements, all following just like one advertising, one product. It really is amazing to look at. I think they do a really good job with it, in my personal opinion, looking from the advertising standpoint, but you know people are paying huge sums of money for that.
Are they doing it like tastefully, or is it just like advertisements postered on the wall?
Occasionally, well, no, they're doing it like it's like hanging banners, and they usually do a pretty good job with it. I mean, I think the best one that I saw was, God, I'll probably go all the way back to like, you know, 2001, maybe even 2000 on this one, they did an Apple theme, and it was their whole Think Different campaign, and they just did a really good job. I mean, I was looking at it, I was like, wow, this is impressive. And I think that's one of the first ones. It might not be the first one they did it, but that's definitely one of the first ones that I saw. So,
hey, and,
yeah.
You know, and whenever I'm at somewhere, and you usually see this, I always see it at least once a month, that I'll be out somewhere that has computers, and there'll either be a blue screen, a desk up, or something will have crashed that'll show me the desktop. And it's always nice just to take a look and see what things are running. You know, cashiers, I like to look over a shoulder just to see what operating systems are running. And this is a whole other branch of hacking, you know, totally just enumerating what's running. And it, you know, maybe there's some way that if you owned the system, you could dial into it, because you would never do it if you were not authorized. But,
good catch.
Yeah, but it's just a part that goes into footprinting. So you know what? If you get that chance again, jump off the bus. I'll send you a check for $1.50 if you take a couple of pictures for me for fair. And, you know, take a look at it. See what you can find out about it.
Yeah, I don't think I said that, but, like, yeah, I just think it'd be cool to get pictures of it, period.
Yeah,
I mean, even if it isn't flaking out, I think it'd be fun to post them in the forums. I mean, I'd be interested. Even if you just don't want to post them in the forums, just email them to me, you know, blackratchet.org. Just, you know, and I'll like, post them somewhere, and I'll provide hosting for you if you want. I mean, it seems cool. And I guess we're kind of like, here's a topic for some week. We could just do an entire thing on, you know, consoles and all the crazy advertising stuff. The two things that I was thinking about when I first read this were, in Boston, there are, like, taxi cabs sort of have, like, I'm not sure if it's sort of like a headline service. It's not actually, like, full motion video. It's in the back of cabs. And it's for like the passengers to watch, and we did see it booting up one day, and it did run Linux, and we were and the other thing that actually I thought of was when I was flying back from DEF CON with Red Nerd, we heard about these things. It was on I forget. I'm completely forgetting the airline. I won't give them free advertising. Anyway, one of the cheapy airlines, I think it's actually owned by Delta, they had these personal video terminals, and you could, like, you know, flip in DirecTV and play online video games and trivia, and it was a pretty fun system, but we always heard that they ran Linux, and we were like, oh, shit. So we actually decided to really, like, start banging on them and, like, pressing them all over the thing so you can actually make them crash. And while we weren't successful at that, when we did land, we were still packing up, and all the systems rebooted. And you saw Tux up in the corner, and it did a. I think it was ARM based, if I'm not mistaken.
These were on the plane and not in the airport.
These were all in the plane, and these were on the back of everyone's seat, so you could watch it, and you can all have your own private video terminal.
That is ridiculous.
Oh, it was awesome. I got especially considering it was a red-eye flight from Las Vegas to Boston nonstop, it definitely provided me something to do. And
that
completely
is very
ignored
cool.
The fact that my circulation was cut off to my legs. So, yeah, that was the two things that I thought of when I saw this. But, yeah, definitely take some pictures if you could tell. So that'd be great.
But I think we could spend a whole show on this. Maybe it's time that I segue into the next email.
Yeah, I think the good. Do you want to read this one or?
I'll tackle this one. It's a little long, but I can tackle it.
Okay, I'll go put on a pot of coffee. You know, brush my teeth and.
Gotcha. Well, here we go. It says, firstly, I'd like to apologize in case this turns out to be a little long, but, ... I spent a year in school doing a unit on True Basic. Becoming interested in it, I began to use it at home, and within a week of working, long into the night, I made a text-based game that ran over my network. It was based on the Matrix movie, and I called it Matrix the Operator. The interface was meant to simulate a text-based operating system. The idea was you played the operator and were given a team of three customizable teammates. And the idea was to hack into the node and gain your team members' items or skills. And then his words are, I had it so that different nodes supported different areas of the matrix. So if your team was in New York, you would have to find a node with another tool, node scan, to gain a car in that node. As both the user files, user login, required a username and password, and the node files were stored on one box, I was able to make a multiplayer aspect to it so that the players could work together to hack specific nodes, to put their teams against each other in battle. I had also started to work on another part that would allow you to log on to the same nodes and cooperate in the battle against any agents, etc. That was on that node. It was going quite well, with a few bugs here and there, but we had some fun playing it. I had a bunch of little tools that would make it easy to maintain and ones that would create node files easily and automatically for me. Of course, I never thought to back it up, and after my Windows box got hit with spyware and Trojans, I ended up losing the entire contents of my hard drive and its source along with it. Just this night, I began to rebuild it again, and a thought struck me how interesting slash legal would it be to put the server on FTP and allow people to download the game and play. I'd expect Warner Brothers to sue, if not kill me, and nobody really to be interested, but if somebody with a little more skill could produce something like this, I think it could be quite good. Oh well, I should have this finished over the next few days, depending on how my exam schedule works out. Signed by TALZ, I don't want to say it wrong, it's T-A-L-Z, so wherever that goes.
Yeah, well, the same person from Scotland in the previous mail message emailed us twice.
Now, I do know that there is a game that exists right now, and it's produced by, I don't remember who produces it, but I know Warner Brothers has a hand in it, as well as the Wachowski Brothers. I know I said it wrong, but they're the gentlemen who wrote The Matrix.
Cool.
The name of the game is The Matrix Online, and it is a massive multiplayer online game, and it's actually graphic-based, and I only check it out because they actually have cinematics, which are continuations of the story. So if nothing else, our user friends should go and check out the site. But I know there is a game similar to this, I'm not really sure what the legal implications of creating a text-based one are, and I don't think either of us can really speak too intelligently on that point.
Well, I'm sure that if he calls it The Matrix, I think someone's going to slap him with a cease and desist order. But at the same time, you know, if you want, take some legal aspects to it, just like, you know, flip it over and just call it something else.
But even if it's totally, you're not trying to make any money off of it, you're not allowed to use it? Or can you call it a parody or a fan script? You can still have the same storyline, but it's not illegal because it's your original work.
Well, see, this is where we can't talk about exactly consists of what it is and who does it. But at the same point, just take some. I mean, you can make a parody of it, but I don't think this really counts as a parody work. But just like, you know, take some poetic license, as it were. Just don't call it The Matrix. Call it something else. I mean,
The Array.
The array. There we go. That's the massive two-dimensional array. So yeah, I mean, it's just more along the lines of you can make. It sounds like a really cool game. I think it's really cool, and I
awesome. Yeah, and, totally.
Yeah, Tal, I don't see you on the forums, and I really want to know why, because you sound really cool.
So get on the forums.
Shameless plug. But yeah, it sounds really cool. Just, you know, fudge it a little bit, and you can take certain concepts from something. I mean, just don't call it an operator. Call it the controller.
Exactly.
Yeah. Poetic license. It sounds like a really cool game, and it sounds really interesting. And also, I think this, you hopefully will learn by now that you really need to back up your data.
And not only that, I mean, it's interesting that you wrote it entirely in BASIC.
Well, what's true BASIC? I've never heard of true BASIC.
See, I don't know. I might kick myself for saying this, but when I think of any of the BASICs, I think of my experience with Apple IIe programming and QBASIC, you know, where it's the 10 print this, 20 input, and $, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I think hopefully we've evolved beyond that by now.
Of course, because they also have BASIC stamp chips and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, it's an interesting way to go at it.
I mean, but he's like talking about, like, you know, doing stuff over the network and making it multiplayer and having it all communicate with each other. And with BASIC, that would be kind of annoying. I mean, with Visual BASIC, you can kind of do that. But with, you know, QBASIC or the other BASIC you were talking about, the BASIC, that'd be kind of difficult.
I mean, because this has sockets, too.
That's going to happen. Hmm?
Because this program has sockets as well, because he said that his friends were playing over a network.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, no, yeah, it's all network aware and everything. I don't think he's doing BASIC. I don't know. We'll have to Google true BASIC afterwards. Find out what the heck that is. Anyway, Tals, yeah. So please, you know, release it. Just change it around. And if you want, just, you know, release it under some other name or, you know, or hell, just toss it out there and wait for Warner Brothers to toss a cease and desist at you. You never know. It might not happen. Doubtful.
And they might want to buy it.
Possibly. You never know. You never know this day. They might like the concept. They might actually completely take everything else and not do anything, but they might send you a nice big fat royalty check every month. Wouldn't that be nice?
Hey,
so yeah, you know, hell, release it if you have nothing to lose. I mean, cease and desist, basically you say, they say, you know, you're violating something right here. Please stop doing it. And you say, okay, you caught me. All right.
And of course, everything we're saying here, you should totally take it with a grain of salt and ask a lawyer, so that you can be sure about the rules in your particular country. Because I do believe he's not in the U.S., right?
Oh, yeah, he is in Scotland, isn't he? Yeah, you mentioned that. Yeah, So everything we're tossing out here is probably completely wrong and ass backwards in Scotland, so you never know.
So ask a lawyer is our professional opinion.
Yes, exactly. Welcome to BinRev Radio. The lawyers are kind of in, sort of. Our last email tonight is from Termite, our loyal fan, according to him. Dear Black Ratchet and Strom. Well, you can be Strom for this one, Ziggy. I don't know if you know about this yet. Most likely you do, being Astros junkies, but I found this a while back searching around for some .NET stuff. And he gives a link out, tinyurl.com/77JulietWhiskeyWhiskey. It's the asterisk.net open source asterisk in C# version 8. I don't think that's the actual title of it, but it basically, just thought I would toss this to you. Have fun discussing it. Loyal fan, Termite. I've never heard of this, and I checked it out, and I was kind of impressed. I didn't know anyone was actually attempting to write asterisk in C#. I don't really know why anyone would want to write asterisk in C#, but hey, more power to them. I like C#. C#'s yummy.
Well, if it's in .NET, isn't it more portable?
Well, it's portable. I mean, I can run Astro. I guess if it follows the Compact framework, I can, with some minor porting probably, I can run it on my pocket PC, but the question is, why?
Well, it's the same reason that you put you put Linux on your Atari, because you can, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not one of the people who does stuff just because you can. I'm very much for it. Okay, cool, you can do this. Now, how does it actually benefit me? I mean, I guess you could run, like, you know, cool stuff, but hey, you know, I think it's pretty cool that actually someone sat down and actually, you know, taken asterisk and ported it over to C sharp, because
Officially developed, or is it just kind of like a one-time project that somebody kind of threw out?
The last update was, well, the first update was 1.0.0.8, which was on November 1st, and then they actually did 1.0.0.9 on December 18th. So I guess it's under asterisk development.
Yeah.
We were sort of wrong. It's an actual port of asterisk Java, which is another port I had no clue existed.
Hmm.
Boy, people just like to really just port their programs over to their favorite programming language. I don't understand it, but go for it.
It's good practice, if nothing else.
Yeah, I actually want to download this, and I will go run it through my super sweet copy of Visual Studio.
Nice.
It's actually done under Visual Studio 2003/2005, according to the webpage. So, for those of you who, I'm curious if it actually runs your Express Edition. Maybe I'll have to try that on a spare computer.
Sounds like a plan.
So, yeah, thanks, Termite, for pointing that out. That sounds pretty interesting. And once again, that's tinyurl.com/77 J as in Juliet, W as in whiskey, and another W as in whiskey.
Nice.
All right. Well, that sort of wraps up the email this evening. So, Sigmund. Do you mind if I call you Ziggy or not? I just think it's fun to call you Ziggy.
Well, actually, you know what? As long as I have a second, the evolution of Dr. Zigman is from Ziggy, the computer on Quantum Leap.
You told me this one, but I'm not sure if anyone else knows this.
Yeah, a lot of people actually, if you ever see my avatar, that's what that is. That's the handheld Ziggy unit. And the text says quantum accelerated hacking. But Dr. Zigman comes from Ziggy, then it became Zigman and Doctor just because I'm actually a biology major. I'm not gonna do anything with computers.
Biology major.
Yeah.
Like fries with that. Sorry. I shouldn't be saying that. I don't know. I always found it highly amusing when I found this out because my cat is named Ziggy after the same computer.
Duh.
Yeah, because my family, when we got our cat back in 1994, we all used to watch Quantum Leap together. Yeah, I know, we're weird.
It's a family show.
Well, it really isn't. I'm watching it now. I'm like, my God, my parents let me watch this? Oof.
Yeah.
Like people getting shot and people doing drugs and wow, okay. But yeah, I just find it humorous that Dr. Zigman has the same namesake as my cat.
There are a lot of jokes I could make, but I don't think I should.
Yeah, I could say a couple things here too, but I won't. I'm sure people are at home right now, so we'll just give them a couple of seconds. All right,
okay, good enough.
Would you like to go first, or shall I?
I'll go first for my personal hacking story going on. It's not so much hacking as much as it's been coding, but I've been developing a new search engine. And what goes along with that is I've had to write the crawler, and all that back end is all in C. The database I'm using is Postgres. Because Postgres, I mean, no, you heard the recent radio episode, of course, because you were there, it's a very powerful database language, and it integrates pretty well with C. The library that it uses, the libpq library, it's definitely a beast. You know, it's a little complex, a little intimidating in the beginning, and they actually have another library that serves as a wrapper that you can use instead of the actual libpq functions. I think it's lib P easy, I think it's called, or lib easy. It's something with the word easy in it. But developing the back end, I had to develop the crawler and some PHP scripting, which is my first foray into PHP. Very nice language. I like that. It's very, very easy to develop in. And I'm putting this search engine together. So hopefully in the next week or two, I'm going to try to post a link and try to take advantage of you guys and everybody out there to just go ahead and beta test it when it's ready. Help me out a little bit, and more or less break it, and tell me how you did it, so that I can fix it.
I bet Kyle L. is listening right now and just salivating over this.
He's coming. That's all right.
He'll take you down to Chinatown. Yeah.
But I mean that's a real advantage of being in the whole area that we like, the scene that we like to hang out in, I guess. Is, you know, let's take advantage. Let's use those skills let's put them to a good productive use. And, you know, let's break something and then fix it.
Well,
that's what I've been up to.
Yeah, well, just to say that, I think I did this kind of rant in the IRC channel a couple of days ago, but so I mean, I'm all for people, you know, finding bugs and breaking everything, but, like, you know, I actually, for those of you who don't know the background story, I wrote something for the IRC channel, and I thought it was really cool, and I was very proud of it, and then everyone just said, "Wow, okay, let's break this." And it just really just rubbed me the wrong way. I mean, I just looked at it as, and I said, here's my opinion on the whole thing. Yes, you can break things, but say, hey, that's a really neat hack, or just some type of thing. And I'm just sort of rambling on here. So I'll go into my personal hacking story. That was kind of a personal hacking story that happened the past week.
Yeah, why don't you tell them what the bot does real quick?
Basically, I Hound Dog, for those of you who are hanging out in the BinRev IRC channel, and for those of you who don't, we'll tell you all about IRC this evening, because that's the topic. We Hound Dog, one of our computers, is basically a script that runs on one of my computers, and he does kind of basic things in the channel. We'll explain what bots do in the topic this evening again. And basically what he does is every time someone puts a link into the channel, he tiny URLs it and catalogs it. And if someone, for example, you know, puts a tiny URL in channel, he actually finds what it is in the actual long link and catalogs it and says it in the channel. So,
which
for
is
example,
totally awesome.
Yeah, I actually find that a lot more useful than the other one. But I was basically saying, well, I think it'd be cool to have something that kind of catalogs all the links that we look at. And this is basically step one. Step two is the web page that will be coming eventually. And so, for example, if you, like, you know, tiny URL the Goatsy, and you're going to post it in the channel and everyone's going to click on it, my hound dog would say, oh, that's Goatsy.cx. And your plans would be foiled by my super cool bot. Anyway, my other story. I moved. I'm no longer living where I am, Lynn. I'm now living down on the south shore of Massachusetts, about an hour and a half away. For those of you who don't know, too bad, but lots of people do know where it is, and I think I probably mentioned it before. I'm now living here, and my computers are kind of, sort of set up. However, I'm running into a problem with everyone's favorite incumbent local exchange carrier, Verizon. I called up about a week before I was actually physically moving in, and they said, you know, I'd like to get a, you know, phone line installed because, you know, I need my landline. I'm a phone freak. It's just one of those things. And, you know, the customer service rep, she was very nice. She set me all up. I got DSL ordered. I got my plan all set up, and they said, okay, you know, when would you like this up? And I said, well, I'm moving in on, such and such a date. And they said, okay, we'll go set it up the day before. Is that okay? And I said, that's fantastic. I'll have everything ready when I go in. So, you know, I'm starting to move in. I'm starting to pack up and tear everything down from my last location. And I get a phone call from a phone number I don't recognize. And I pick it up, and it's Verizon. And they say, well, we got your line all set up on our end, but we can't access it on your end. And we don't know why. And I say, oh, okay. And they say, well, there's a utility clause here, but we can't get access to it. We need to talk to your landlord, and we need to get that in. And I said, okay, what could be causing this? And he says, well, probably what happened was the previous tenant had, like, Comcast Digital Voice or some place where he's moved off the Verizon punch-down block and moved over to the Comcast or some other, you know, CLEX punch-down block into the wiring closet. Yeah, so I'm like, oh, okay. And I've actually run into this problem before at one of my previous apartments when I was at college, and that was like, you know, a $35 service fee for them to come in, take 5 minutes to pull the pair off one block, shove it down another with their punch-down tool, and, you know, just make sure so my inside wiring is connected to the outside wiring that I'm running phone service on. So I look at it, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll go talk to the... they said, well, we can't do anything right now. And I said, well, I understand that, and I'll go talk to my landlord and see if I can get the wiring closet. So I call my landlord up and say, yeah, so the previous tenant had Comcast, and I can't get phone service. And he says, oh, okay, I'll have that stuff open for Verizon. And I said, well, I know what the hell I'm doing. I don't want to pay, like, you know, a $35, $50 service fee for them to come out and move one pair of wires.
Well,
I have all the tools. Yeah, I can do it. I know what the hell I'm doing. I know exactly what's wrong with the damn situation. And I have all the tools to diagnose it. And they said, well, you're not a telephone guy. And I was like, well,
like, you don't know who I am.
Yeah, I know. I says, well, technically you're right, but I do know what I'm doing. Well, you're not a telephone guy. We can't open the closet for you.
You want to borrow my hard hat?
I have a hard hat. I have a Bell Atlantic hard hat.
Why don't you just walk in wearing the hard hat?
Well, I did do that, and after doing this, I finally said, fine, where the hell is this damn utility closet? So I did a little, I don't know, quote-unquote urban exploration,
dun,
I guess you could call
dun,
it.
Dun, sorry.
Yeah, this damn wiring closet has like a deadbolt, and it's crazy. I mean, I guess they really don't want people, you know, accessing their own bloody telephone wiring. Despite the fact that we're legally allowed to do that, technically. You know, thanks to the Bell breakup, that's past the line of demarcation, and that's not the phone company's problem. So, yes, I'm currently without landline, and I'm currently without DSL. However, my DSL modem did show up today, and Verizon should be stopping by the 11th to, you know, take a telephone pole, you know, cover it in chain link fence, and put it where the sun doesn't shine on me.
Nice.
Yeah. So I love how, you know, rules, I understand where they're coming from because, you know, as Koresh pointed out today on while I was talking to him and complaining about this, he said, dude, people think they can fix their own computers and look what the hell happens. Imagine what happens when they think they can fix their own phone. And I was like, yeah, I guess you're right. But still,
yeah.
I mean, it's basically, they're going to be here for 5 minutes. You're going to take their punch-down block and you're going to take their little punch-down tool and go yoink, yoink, and then you're going to go ka-chunk, ka-chunk. And that's it.
Who owns the punch-down block? Is that Verizon's punch-down block, or is it your association's punch-down, or your building owner's association?
I think it's my building. I'm to be honest, I'm not exactly sure who owns it, but considering that it, I believe, unless of course I might have changed it, but I ran into this exact situation, and they actually didn't mention the fact that it might cost a service call, so I might be able to eke out of it, but I know what the hell I'm doing. It's got my damn phone line. It's my phone line on my inside, so it's probably my problem. They're going to charge me an arm and a leg for it. This whole thing is silly.
Oh, well.
Yep. All right, so, yeah, end of rant. That's my sort of wrapped up.
All right.
Well, yeah,
we'll see you guys next week.
All right, yeah. We're going to have an extra abbreviated episode this week. I always think it'd be cool to have, like, Stank always said, like, the episodes originally were, like, supposed to be an hour, and we've just sort of done, like, an hour and a half, like, all of a sudden. Well, not all of a sudden, but it just sort of expanded over to an hour and a half. We should just, like, start taking a... Yeah, we're just going to do an hour from now on. Screw all you guys.
Yeah, we're
but
not starting tonight.
About, yeah. We're talking about iPods and Gen 2. So what's the topic for tonight, Digman?
The topic for tonight is Internet Relay Chat, more commonly known as IRC. And I think you've got a handle. You want to give us a little bit of background on what IRC is, where it comes from?
Yes, I do have piles of notes here. We got gratuitous show notes tonight. We were crazy on that. Seriously, I did a ton of show notes, and I mailed it to Zygmunt, then he mailed me back a ton of show notes, so I basically just sort of clobbered them together, and we have, like, gobs and gobs of notes, so... Prepare to be enlightened, folks.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, basically, an Internet Relay Chat is basically what it was, is it was Instant Messenger before Instant Messenger was even heard of. So, like, nice forms for, like, instant kind of communication over the Internet. It's it's mainly designed for, like, you know, groups of group talk, like conference calls type things. And it's designed for, like, online discussion and forums called channels, but it also kind of allows for one-to-one communication, like instant messages and such. IRC was created by, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce his name, Jarko or Carrion. I apologize to good old Jarko over there. His nickname was Wiz. Let's call him Wiz. It was created in late August 1988, and basically he created it to replace a program called MUT, which stands for Multi-User Talk. MUT was on a BBS called Olubox in Finland. Wiz found inspiration in the Bitnet Relay Chat, which operated on the old Bitnet network. And for those of you who don't know what Bitnet is, look it up on Wikipedia. Bitnet was cool. Bitnet was, like, old school. I remember learning about Bitnet back in 88 when I had no idea what the hell a damn computer was for them point. IRC was cool because it really gained prominence back when it was used in 1991 to report on the Soviet coup attempt. Despite the fact that, you know, everything had a media blackout, IRC was one of, like, the few forums that was actually used for live information. Also, like, back in 1991, that's when the Internet really started to shine through for certain people, because you got a lot of, like, you know, email, and they really didn't censor it because most people didn't know what the hell it was at that point, except for the Kluful. So a lot of information leaked out that way. Also, it was also used in a similar fashion by Kuwaitis during the Iraqi invasion, although I think it was kind of less prominent there because the Soviet coup only lasted, like, 5 days tops. Meanwhile, you know, the Iraqi occupation lasted slightly longer than that, like months. Back in the day, IRC didn't really have many features, and like a lot of stuff like, you know, channel names that we sort of take in, you know, bands, you know, stuff that comes in really handy and we take for granted today, didn't exist. Channels were numbered, basically from, it was channel 4 to channel 57, and the channel topic that we had today, that's what they used to describe what the channel was. Like, you didn't have, like, a channel called BinRev.
It was a number.
Channel 4. Hmm?
Yeah, it was a number.
Yeah, you had a number, and basically you had topics saying, this is the BinRev discussion channel, and then you'd have all kinds of people coming in and hopefully talking about BinRev. Probably trying to get, you know, people impersonating girls and trying to get cyber sex, but anyway.
from the inception.
Yeah, from the inception. That's what IRC was for, I bet. That's what they did, you know. Porn, wares, and MP3s.
Nice.
We'll get into that later. You don't run into this much today. This is actually something I picked up while I was doing research for that. The only holdover of all these numbered channels is that if you ever try to join something called Channel Zero, it causes your IRC program to leave all the channels it's presently on. Because, you know, back in the day, Channel Zero was the original command to leave all your channels. I didn't know that. I'm going to actually have to fool around with that next time I'm on IRC and have lots of time to kill.
Because you didn't start with a pound sign when you try to join Channel Zero, is it? It's just join channel, it's just join Channel Zero, right?
I wonder, I need to figure that out. I don't know if it's pound zero.
Well, I have to tell you a little bit.
Yeah, I will. Maybe it could just be join zero. We'll have to figure that out. We'll do research. Next time you come on, Sigmund, you'll have to tell us.
Cool.
Pardon me. The first really major change to IRC was in version 2.5, and that's basically when a lot of features that we are useful, that we are used to, came into being. Like, for example, there were something called plus channels, and basically plus channels were later replaced with what we refer to now as pound channels. In version 2.7, you know, numeric channels were removed entirely, and each channel were given their own special name like we're used to today. Also in 2.7, the infamous ban command was implemented. Thank God. Also, in 2.8, IRC also started implementing other things called ampersand channels, which only exist on the current server, not the entire network. We'll cover that later. And bang channels, which were basically their attempt at trying to make certain things secure from certain attacks that we'll discuss later. Basically, 2.8 is the baseline release that all current implementations of IRC are derived, like all the IRC servers. And that's basically what we're up to today.
Now, a lot of that is all, it's all lined out and more or less given in computer language, or people who are in the computer world for language 7 to understand in the RFCs, which are, of course, the requests for comments.
Yeah, RFCs are basically just, you know, basically blueprints for network protocols, and IRC is covered by them, I assume. Well, you just said so, so. What,
yeah.
What RFCs are they covered by? Do you even have a clue?
The original RFC is 1459 or 1459, and I have that tiny URL. You can check it out at tinyurl.com/7QRBF. And from
the back, Romeo Bravo Fox.
There you go. And what they've more or less done is rather than just replacing it, they've just constantly updated it with other RFCs, most of them released in 2000, like 2810, which is the architecture of Internet Relay Chat, 2811, which is channel management, 2812, which is client protocol for things like CPCP, and 2813, which is server protocol. And then on top of that, they have other RFCs for things like the DCC connections and things like that. So what's constantly been happening is they've just been updating and, you know, modernizing different aspects of Internet Relay Chat so that it can grow with the community that uses it. Dan?
Gotta love RFCs. IRC is TCP, I assume, correct?
Yes, it is a connection-based. It is not UDP or anything else. It is a nice connection-based server chat language.
So basically, I can whip out my Netcat or my Telnet and just, like, you know, go directly into IRC and start issuing commands?
You know, I'll be honest, I don't know if you can use Netcat because I've never tried, but I know you can Telnet into it. And every now and then when I'm feeling really weak, I like to, you know, IRC from Telnet.
You actually IRC from Telnet?
Every now and then, you know.
Wow. You're hardcore.
Well, I wrote a program that was I was writing an IRC. It was more an IRC relay than anything else. It wasn't really a server because it was going to connect out to other servers. So if you look at the RFCs, you really can have a full understanding of how IRC works, and you can develop your own applications that will interface into IRC from the RFCs.
Sounds pretty spiffy. Since you're, like, you know, the expert of RFCs here, how is IRC actually set up with, like, the network topology, and you're talking about, like, relays and all that groovy stuff, so do you actually know how they all hook in?
Well, the way that most of them are operating right now, and there's two main schools. One of the schools is really old school, and then they have what most of them are doing now. All of IRC is broken up into networks, which are a collection of servers that all connect, they interconnect to each other, and a client can go ahead or a regular user can connect to one of the servers and gain access to that network. And the networks are like undernet, fnet, and downnet. We'll get into those later. But more or less, the servers for undernet are all connected to other undernet servers. They don't interconnect with downnet. The way it used to work was that it was actually a chain. And one server would connect to two other servers, and one of those two servers would connect to two other servers, or whatever the number would be, and you would have, that way you weren't sending useless and extra data along. But now the way it's more or less working is all the servers are interconnected, and it's less of a linear layout. And that also just goes with growth. You know, it's a lot harder to stay organized and have a system like that when you have upteen IRC servers.
Well, I mean, you're saying it's less of a linear layout, but it's still linear in some fashion because you have, like, wonderful problems, like, with net splits and, and stuff that we'll talk about later, and,
yeah,
like, you know, certain people suddenly falling, like, entire, like, group of people falling off the entire internet because their connection goes down, and it looks like they all just, like, left the channel at once, but in reality it's because their server crashed. So it is linear to a point, but it is more meshy, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Now, is meshy even a word? I don't even
meshy
know.
Meshy is a word. I'm calling
meshy,
that a word.
Okay. It's meshy. I made a big mesh. Anyways, well, okay, we're talking about the various IRC networks, so we'll just sort of segue into that. The four major networks, or they call them the Big Four. It's pretty cool, Big Four. There are currently four networks, obviously. Basically, they serve about 100,000 clients per day, which is pretty impressive in my book.
Mm-hmm.
The four networks are FNet. Is it FNet or EFNet?
I always thought it was FNet.
I always call it FNet, too. I'm not exactly sure. IRCNet, QuakeNet, and UnderNet.
UnderNet.
And UnderNet's elite. I like UnderNet. FNet was, I guess you could say, is one of the first major networks. It originally, FNet, EF, stands for Eris Free. Back in the day, it was basically, there was a server called Eris, or it's like eris.berkeley.edu, and it was really causing a lot of trouble with, like, the original kind of network that existed. And basically, people who were sick and tired of it decided to create FNet. And so was Eris Free. And when they all left, basically, the original net decided to die. I think the original net was called ANet. I'm not even completely sure about that. I should have looked into that. FNet's cool. It's very old school. It's been around for quite a while, but sadly, in recent years, there's been a lot of denial-of-service attacks, a lot. And the network has, I wouldn't say started to crumble, but it's definitely not what it once was.
You know, I think now FNet is the AOL chat room of IRC.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, there's still people over there that know what the hell they're doing. It's just the skiddies are there, and it's interesting. It's a shadow of its former self. People have moved on to greater things. One of the reasons it's very old school and people have moved on to other networks is that there's a distinct lack of two services. It's called NICServe and ChanServe.
Definitely.
And we'll cover what exactly they do later. They basically do a lot of maintenance functions that come in very handy. And FNet is basically, here's what it is. It's the Wild West of IRC. It's very Mad Max-like. There's all kinds of crazy stuff that goes on over there. It's very, you know, when you go onto FNet, make sure you have your shotgun and your can of petrol, so you'll be all set. It's also the least unified network on IRC. It has a very, very large variations on server rules and policies, depending on which server you actually connect to. It has no central administration authority whatsoever, which a lot of other networks do. It's still used by people who had their channel there in the first place. I don't think I ever heard of, hey, I want to set up this new channel on FNet. I've never heard them say that. Related to FNet, there's IRCNet. IRCNet is one of the largest networks in the world. It currently has more than 100,000 users by itself.
Wow.
IRCNet was actually formed as a European fork of FNet after a policy disagreement back in, summer 1996. July? Okay. I think they had a disagreement on how much, you know, server operator power people should have and what exactly they should do and whether or not server operators should be able to interfere in channels. So basically they had a giant disagreement and all the European people were like, fine, we're going to take our servers and play over here. and thus, IRCNet was born. One of the funny things that I found researching that, a rumor is that IRCNet got its official start when a major U.S. FNet hub decided to, whether or not accidentally or on purpose, decided to de-link some of the European servers without warning. And all the European admins got really pissed off and declared their independence. So I kind of find that humorous.
I'm just going to interrupt you for a second and to say what it means to D-Link. It means that the people can still connect to that server and still talk with people on that server, but they don't have access to the rest of the IRC network that that server is a part of.
Yeah, we should have covered all these terms beforehand. Oh, well.
Just take
notes, boys and girls, and we'll cover this later.
There'll be a short quiz afterwards.
Yes, it'll be a short quiz, and you know, make sure you pass. Undernet. Undernet's awesome. I love Undernet. It was established in October 1992 as an experimental network. They wanted to run an experimental version of the FNET IRC 2.7 server software. This is before 2.8. They created it to attempt to make it less bandwidth intense and generally less chaotic. Net splits and takeovers were like really starting to become a problem over in FNET. Ever since Undernet broke away from FNET, there was like during the mid-1990s, Undernet really decided to develop a reputation which was like it was really undeserved because I used to be on Undernet back in like 1995, 1996.
I was a little bit later, but I was always on Undernet,
Undernet rocked. It was like lowell.mass.us.undernet.org. That's the one it is. Basically, seriously, everyone started to say, like, oh, Undernet, oh, it's bad. It's a heaven. They called it a haven for online criminals, pedophiles, and child molesters. And I was like, whoa, okay.
Wow.
And I think part of the reason was because it was, Undernet. Ooh, it's underground. It's elite. It's cool. All the people are over there, and they're doing evil things, and they're stealing credit cards. That's my personal opinion of it.
I think the original, not that I would ever download anything that I hadn't purchased, but I think the original, the first time I had ever seen a Where's chat room was on Undernet. So I don't want to feed the fire on that one, but I don't know how undeserved that name is. It definitely was more or less the haven for the underground computer user community. You know, be it a hacker or simply just a coder, or somebody who's going to be malicious. I really think a lot of people who were computer savvy were leaving things like FNET and coming to Undernet just because it was less known at the time, and they had a little bit more of that freedom.
Well, also it's along the lines of, geez, you know, let me set my Where's room up over on Undernet, so because they're already into that already.
Exactly.
So perhaps it's just sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It could
only knows. Anyway, Undernet's good people. We're not gonna badmouth them anymore.
Channel chit chat on Undernet.
Undernet's elite. Use them. Don't use them for weirs or pedophiles or if you're a child molester. Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. QuakeNet. QuakeNet is actually, I didn't actually know this until I started researching it. I remember hearing about it, but I just sort of dismissed it out of hand as just rumors. QuakeNet has over 200,000 users every day, making it the largest, according to them, the largest IRC network in the world. It has over 180,000 different channels. Wow. It's been part of the Big Four ever since Dalnet sort of fell off, and we'll just talk about that later. It had a peak on 8th of February 2005. The network recorded over 2,400... No, I'm sorry, I'm saying that wrong. 243,394 simultaneous connections, which is just insane. It was founded in 1997 as an IRC network for Quake World players, which, for those of you who played Quake World, you know what it is, but if not, you know, it was basically Quake 1 with better network stuff. It's seen huge growth over the years and attracted a lot of gamers. Came popular initially because of its network stability and the service bots that it had. QuakeNet has tons of crazy different services you can use. Those are the big four. The other two we're going to cover, Dalnet. Dalnet is the, Dalnet was created back in mid-90s, much like other ones. It was basically a bunch of people on FNET in the Pound Star Trek discussion group, which
nice.
You can just tell they're a bunch of furry tooth geeks over there,
decided
to set up their own IRC server. Hey, I'm a Trekkie. I know how it is, but some people are just like that.
Be me up, Black Ratchet.
Hey, I'm just telling them like it is. Basically, they wanted to set up their own IRC service, So this guy named I'm not even going to try to pronounce it, Dalgerthun, that was his handle, and he decided to create his own IRC server, so everyone started calling it DalsNet. And they eventually decided to just call it DalNet for the hell of it. DalNet was pretty cool up until about 2002, 2003, when people really started, like, it was subject of massive denial of service attacks, like, insane. You couldn't connect to it at all. And also right around that time, one of their major servers, tsunami.dal.net, decided to conk out. Everyone says it wasn't due to the denial of service, but for personal reasons. I don't know. I don't care. It wasn't my problem. But anyway, that sort of thing, that's really when they started losing their top four status. Because back before, you know, back up until 2002, it was FNet, UnderNet, DalNet, and whatever that fourth one was, what I said, because I can't remember it right now. IRCNet, thank you.
Oh.
Thanks for bailing me out there, Zygmunt. Jeez,
I tried,
really stupid. Yeah, the other network we're going to cover is, also, DalNet is very important because it's the home of Pound the Bin Rev, the Bin Rev discussion channel. Ooh, I'm getting hiccups.
And it's another great server that has great services.
Yes.
Which we'll get into later.
Yeah. Freenode is the sixth network we're going to talk about. That's actually the home of Pound Diffinomicon. Freenode is basically, it was formerly known as the Open Project Network. It was a very cool IRC network, which basically tried to gear itself toward the free software movement. It's really popular with free and open source use software users and programmers. They say they're like, you know, the official network of major free software projects, such as Debian, New Linux, and the GNU project Freenode. Freenode reports over, you know, 27,000 simultaneous connections as a weekly peak, but a lot of people you'll find over there are just, like, a lot of, like, free open source projects are on Freenode. And Freenode is groovy people. I had some slight problems with them earlier, but they've really toned down a lot of their stuff that I've had trouble with earlier. Just
also, a lot of the programming and the Linux help channels, things like that, are on Freenode as well. So if any of our listeners are having a problem with their Slackware, their Gentoo documentation, or their installs, they could definitely, Freenode would be the place to check out. Just make sure that before you ask a question that you've researched it, because, you know, they've definitely got some trigger fingers on their attitudes. So just be careful.
Well, I mean, that's IRC. You're going to basically approach IRC like you would approach with any forum. Sit back, read the mail, and don't be a noob. So, all right, I've been chit-chatting about IRC networks. Do you actually want to define all these terms we've been talking about, like services and bots and crazy stuff like that?
I'll start out with two of my favorites, and these are done by server ops, or IRC ops, I should say. And an IRC op is...
servers?
Yeah, basically, yeah. It's just the individuals who run the servers, they become operators of the entire server. And they have the power to issue, first off, what's called a K-line, which stands for a kill line, and that's a kick or a ban from an IRC server. It's not the network, it's just an individual server. So if you were connected to rumble.florida.us.dal.net, you could be K-lined from Rumble, but still connect to the DalNet network by connecting to their Broadway or their Australia server. Okay, so that's the K-line. And then moving on to a little bit more painful from a K-line is a G-line, which is short for a global kill line, which will kill you from the network, meaning that you cannot connect to the IRC network at all. No server will accept you. Okay. Then we also have, like I was saying,
how exactly would you get K-lined or G-lined? I assume that these are kind of serious matters if you're going to get banned from the entire network.
IRC ops are notoriously, passive is the wrong word, but they will not really interfere with channel business. But if there's a spam bot or something like that, things that are like a real disruption of the actual IRC experience and the IRC service, putting unnecessary system load, that's when an IRC op will come in and will issue a K-line or, if necessary, a G-line to the offending users. So, I mean, people don't just get K-lines. You have to really, really earn it. But, okay, moving on from there, we have what we were just talking about, the IRC op. And they are the people who watch over the entire network. The people who are right below them are going to be the channel operators. And what a channel op does is they are responsible for a specific channel. And they have certain administrative powers on that channel to help facilitate discussions. Moving from them, we also have a term which is known as voice. Voice is a mode that we'll get into later, plus V. And it gives the user the ability to talk in a channel that's moderated. And we'll talk about moderated in a little bit. And from there, you know, we have just a few of the really basic commands. Join, of course, will join an IRC channel. It would be join and then the name of the channel. It also depends on your client. Part will leave a channel. And then we have message, or MSG, which is a private message, which can either be sent to a channel or to a specific user. All right. And I guess as long as we're going there, we can talk about some user modes real quick. And a user mode is something that is set specifically for you as a user. Usually you set them when you log on, but you can set them just about anything. And they tell other users who can do who can look up information about you, and they tell the servers themselves and the IRC operators what kind of user you are. Okay, one worth mentioning is you could set the user mode plus O, and only an IRC operator can do that. And that is mostly done so that nobody can impersonate an IRC operator. So you can actually look up with what's called who is. Anyone want to talk about who is real quick?
Yeah, sure, go ahead. Do you want to talk about it or shall I?
Well, why don't you mention it real quick?
Well, who is like, you know, you get a little information on the users. You see where they're coming from. You see what their identity is, what server they're using, how long they've been logged in, if they've been idle for how long. It's just like vital statistics on a certain user of the network. It's pretty handy, and you can usually, if you know someone's coming in from, if you see someone called Black Ratchet, and you know I'm coming in from Massachusetts, and you see him coming in from California, it could be someone impersonating me, someone else who thinks Black Ratchet's a cool name and therefore doesn't know someone else is using it already. So that's what it is. It's just basically it's a way to determine who's who.
Exactly. And this plus O would show up for an IRC operator so that people cannot impersonate an IRC operator.
Yeah, it shows you what channels you're on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll cut the statistics. Anyway, go on.
All right, the next mode being plus I, and I stands for invisible. Now, this doesn't actually make you invisible, but what it does is it will exclude your name from being listed if anybody just does a who, which will just list all the users on IRC, or if people just try to check the names on a channel without actually joining the channel. It will not list your nick. But it's also, there are a lot of exceptions to this rule. If the user is on the channel and requests the channel's names, it'll list your name because you're already there, you know, he can already see you. And it's not like you don't appear in the who's in the channel lists and things like that. It's just it's just so that a lot of people set it so that they don't appear for spam bots who are just trying to message everybody, every nick that they can handle. Personally, I always set mode plus I, and most clients will default to setting plus I.
I've hardly seen a client that doesn't do that. I think you have to usually opt out of it.
Okay. Then you have plus S, which is for server notices, and that's information on net splits, and it's actual server technical information. It's things that, you know, sometimes it's interesting to look at, but for the most part, it's really for the IRC ops to help them out. And it's just a little bit more verbose of what's going on behind the scenes of IRC. You can set that. And, you know, by all means, sometimes you should check it and just to see what scrolls by, you know? Maybe it'd be interesting to see what's going on. What are the net splits that are in progress?
Oh, I always do that. I love just, because I'm an information junkie myself, so.
And then plus W is, W is for wallops or wall ops. And what that
not
does is you will be able to, any message that's sent to the IRC operators, usually, because you can actually page an IRC operator, more or less. I've actually never done it. I didn't know you could until recently, until I was researching for this show. But if you have your wallops on, you will get those information. You will get those pages as well. And you know, I like to see that kind of stuff. Usually, yeah, I'm curious. I want to know what's going down.
Mm-hmm.
And the final user mode that we'll talk about is plus B, and that identifies the user as a bot. And that's important because a lot of networks will require that you identify all bots, and they'll limit the number of bots you can have. Some servers and some networks will totally ban bots. And, you know, that's why you have to set that mode plus two. Yeah, it just really means that, hey, I'm a bot. Don't really, you know, don't bother me too much.
Indeed.
And then just to move on from there, we'll talk about channel modes. I'll try to go through that a little bit more quickly. First channel mode would be plus B, and then a host mask, and that'll ban anything that matches that host mask from joining a channel. Then you have a ban exemption, which is BE, or sometimes just E. And what that does, and that actually, a ban exemption will supersede any ban, which I learned the hard way, but we're not going to get into that. that's if you wanted settings. Let's say you wanted to ban everybody who uses AOL, but you have one friend who uses AOL, so you're going to set a ban exemption for their nick or something. Okay, moving down, we have plus M, which is moderated, as we were speaking earlier. What a moderated channel is one in which only channel operators and those who have voice can talk. And sometimes channels are like that right from the get-go. You know, you have to already know them, or you have to earn a voice somehow. But more often than not, you usually only use moderated if a channel is a little bit out of control, and a channel operator will step in and make the channel plus M, give everybody a second to calm down, you know, and move on with their lives. But you know, that's a couple more real quick. Plus K, and then an actual password. And it creates a channel password, a channel key. You can't join the channel without the key. Then you have plus L and then a number, and it limits the total number of people that are in the IRC channel. Plus N is no outside messages, meaning that you cannot send a flash message or a message to a channel unless you are a member of the channel. You have to have joined it. You can't just send
yes.
it. And then we have plus T, which is the final one we'll cover, and that means that only ops can set the topic. And I've actually never seen a channel that was not plus T.
Boston 2600 is not plus T, which
oh,
I really,
really
shocked on. Yeah, we're very groovy power to the people like that. You want to get that link out?
You know, you know the fancy slang. Why don't I let you do it?
Okay, well, Zygmunt has in his notes here. Many, many more. Check out tinyurl.com/delta3uniformfoxmike for a good list.
Yeah, there's a ton of modes.
Yeah, since we're talking about bots and everything, and they said, like, it's usually frowned on by IRC because they actually use up network resources. And basically, bots got a bad name because people use them for spamming purposes and annoying stuff like that. But there are good bots, like Nick and Chancer. Basically, Nixer only lets you have a certain person have a certain nick, like you have to identify yourself to it, and it interfaces directly with the internet the IRC server, and it knows whether or not you've identified, and it can, like, kick you right off the service, or it can forcibly change your nick to something else that it dislikes.
And those actually, they have they have that special name that's Beyond Bot. They're actually called services.
Services. That's right. Boy,
another common one is MemoServe. You'll see that on a couple of networks. You don't see it as much now, but MemoServe, you can just leave a message for another user. But those are the services.
I hate MemoServe. ChanServe basically is a service that helps you administrate your channel. Like, if someone, God forbid, actually takes over the channel, you can actually say, I've created this channel, here's my, you know, identification code, fix it for me, I know what I'm doing, you know, give me ops back, and it'll give you ops, and you can take control back. Two bots that Pound Binrev uses on irc.dal.net, joined today. There's Hounddog, which I've sort of coded up myself, and it's just a deck of cards right now. I really need to code it. Like I said, it does that whole tiny URL thing. It provides some entertainment, like it constantly does random things in the channel if you ever talk to it. But the original use of Hounddog is we were under attack by spammers, and basically Hounddog just, I created it as a necessity, and it just took out all the spammers, or attempted to, and, you know, banned them immediately and took them on out and kicked them off the channel. And it's done a good job. It does a relatively good job. Sometimes there's problems, but
Hounddog is a great, and you know what? Hounddog has an amazing feature that I very rarely see you talk about this, and I'm going to make you talk about it now. But
what?
Hound Dog will actually notice if the nick is just a generated nick. You know, if it's just like JK34M, it'll notice that it has that, right?
Well, basically what do? We've blacklisted a lot of channels, like, you know, for example, we don't really see many people from Pound Gay Indonesia on BinRevs. You know, if someone ever does that, you know, we'll make an exemption for them, well, God forbid. But,
a ban exemption.
A ban exemption, exactly. If someone, like, joins the channel and on Gay Indonesia, Hound Dog will see that and say, okay, this is probably a bot, I'm going to kick him. And if it automatically rejoins, it bans them immediately. So it doesn't actually pick up on the nicks because they actually piggyback. A lot of the spammers are starting to actually infect people with viruses and piggyback on their IRC sessions, so their actual real nicks. It's very disgusting. We'll talk about that at a later date because it's interesting the way they do it.
I can remember there was a time where we were having people were doing join floods, and you had it set so that Hound Dog would notice the IPs that were doing the join flood, then would ban the IPs.
Oh, yeah, well, it does pick out certain auto-generated nicks. Like, there were certain ones that I were using in the program the person was using to attack us followed certain rules, or he set it up to follow certain rules. So basically it was a cat and mouse game where he would adjust his rule set, then I would adjust Hound Dog to pick it up and it would notice it. And there was some slight collateral damage from that, but we won't talk about that. Sorry, cool. Blunderbuss. And then there's BinRev Stats. What do we want to talk about that quickly?
BinRev Stats is my bot. I run it off of my little 400 megahertz box. And the BinRev Stats box, what it does is it keeps a record of what's going on, who joins, who leaves, how many lines people have said, how many smiley faces, things like that. You know, things that are interesting to keep stats about. And it actually, once an hour, will generate a web page. It's at http://irc.binrev.com. And you can actually check out the last time a lot of people were there. You can see what hours have the most usage. You can get a random quote from what's going on in the channel. And that bot runs a version of software by the name of, you know, I don't know if it's supposed to be said or spelled, but it's PISG. And, you know, I hacked it up a little bit to kind of get it to do what I wanted. But for the most part, you know, PISG is the people who took, I have to give credit on that. And I wish I knew who wrote it. So please forgive me if you're listening to this, but I'm trying to give you some credit. But
if you go to IRCBinRev.com and scroll all the way down, I believe the author's name is right there.
Yeah,
if not, you can I know a link to the web pages, and you can find out there. Do you want to talk about clients next?
You want to talk about bad bots real quick?
Oh, I guess we can talk about bad bots. Like,
or you want to save that for the IRC hacking?
I don't know. We'll talk about bad bots, and maybe we'll talk about IRC hacking on a later episode.
Okay.
But the two bad bots are clones, and basically, what exactly do clones? Just because there's all kinds of different caveats you can use with them.
Well, I mean, you can't necessarily say that a clone is a bad bot, because technically a clone is really just another connection from the same computer, the same server, the same location. So a clone is just another session. But what a lot of people will do is they'll have clones, and then they'll have bots on other systems, and they'll bring them all up onto the same IRC network, and then they'll have what's called a botnet. And then that network of bots has a lot more bandwidth than the average user. And what people can use these botnets for, I mean, there's a whole slew of things. They can go ahead and they can flood people offline just with ping requests. If you send enough of them, you know, if you have 100 of your bots that you control sending a ping reply to one person, I mean, one user really can't handle that. So you run into a problem where, you know, it's not an active connection. It's just a bot who does your bidding. But, I mean, there are other things that bots do. What else? There's spam. Then they have, they have all sorts of bots that do terrible, terrible things.
Bots are like guns. They can be used for good or evil. It depends on what the person uses it for.
Definitely.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, since we're talking about all this wonderful stuff about IRC, I bet you're going, well, how the hell do I join? So we're going to talk a quick thing about clients. The most popular one, I guess, for Windows-based systems is it MIRC or is it M-I-R-C? I don't even know
it
how to pronounce
M-I-R-C. It. It is M-I-R-C. It is not MIRC. It is M-I-R-C.
Yes, M-I-R-C. It's basically the most popular client ever. I remember using it back in 1996, or trying to use it, because my computer would constantly crash, because it was a Windows 3.1. There are a lot more, but it was basically the IRC client for Windows systems up until quite recently. There are lots of more clients now. There's
you know, I probably should just mention that MIRC is written, or MIRC, is written by K-Lad Martin Bay, and he's always been doing it, and he's always released it as shareware that you can use for as long as you like. But
yeah,
you know, if you're using his product, you should hook him up and send him a couple of bucks. And then you can get a registered version. He doesn't have a nag screen or anything. He's just saying, you know, I made this, you know, hook a brother up.
Hook a brother up. Yeah, you should get a little Kaden there with his afro. There's also a lot of other Windows clients. There's Berserk, B-E-R-S-I-R-C, K-V-I-R-C, Trillion, which is also an instant messaging client, and X-Chat. Now, X-Chat is actually the Windows client. Their official one is in order to download the binaries, you have to pay for it, and that's a bit of a sticky subject. But there's actually a free client out there if you look, and I apologize right now because I don't have a quick link to it. But I think it's like silverx.org, or like look for OCCY XChat, and I believe that'll point you to the right one.
Those are all Windows clients, right?
Yeah, these are all Windows clients. Basically, for Mac OS X, there's something called IRCLE. I believe it's pronounced Urkel. And Colloquy, C-O-L-L-O-K-U-Y. There's also an XChat fork. Also, XChat's open source. XChat also works on Linux. There's XChat Aqua. For Linux, there's a boatload of them. IRC2 is basically, it's the canonical Unix IRC client. I personally use something called IRC, I-R-S-S-I. I highly recommend it. It's console-based. It's very customizable, and it's pretty good. XChat's also originally for Linux. There's also one called BitchX, which I can't stand personally. I don't know why.
Really? Not a BitchX?
Really
BitchX, you know, the only problem with really BitchX is that it wasn't, like, it was developed and developed and developed, and then they kind of just stopped developing it. Like, they had a lot of things. Like, there are a lot of, like, IRC has features with logging is one example, where you can use wild characters and you can name the logs based on the date. BitchX doesn't have that functionality built in. It kind of looks like, you know, they got it to work and it works really well. They just didn't keep developing new and cooler features. But it's not a bad client. And usually,
well, if it works really well, I mean, you know, you can just sort of stop out of there. I don't know.
But usually it's on just about every single Linux box. So if you get stuck and you're somewhere, give BitchX a try. Definitely.
Yeah, BitchX is always there. My IRSSI is IRC. This is a kind of, you have to grab it yourself. Also, there's starting to become built-in stuff with built-in IRC clients to web browsers. For example, there's Chatzilla, which is part of the Mozilla distribution. Not Firefox, but Mozilla itself. And Opera also has a built-in IRC client for the six of you that still use Opera. if you're a new person, MIRC is really, it's intuitive, kind of, but it's also kind of complex. You might want to prefer something called Miranda or Trillion, which are both instant messaging clients that have IRC capability. So and they look very much like instant messaging, so it's very easy to ease yourself in.
Another nice thing of MIRC is if you're fancying yourself as an intermediate user, MIRC has its built-in own scripting language that's very easy and very well documented, as well as there are no less than 100,000 add-on scripts that you could take in. Like personally, I use a script called Decadence for Windows, and that has a lot of the channel protections. And I guess on a later episode, we'll have to cover the attacks and jazz, but you know, a lot of these clients have built-in programming support. XChat supports Perl. I know a bunch of the other ones will allow you to create your own scripts.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, you work on an IRC scripting episode, and we'll have to put it on here.
Nice.
I don't know, good channels, Pound Linux on irc.freenode.net, and a couple other others, like Linux Help, I believe. Of course, on irc.dal.net, there's Town Binrel, where you can all talk, where Zygmunt and I constantly hang out. You can always see us there. Whether or not we'll actually be at the keyboard leaves it something to be found.
I'll probably be there.
Sure. Yeah, you're always there. I'm usually there. Pound Diffonomicon on Freenode as well, which is, you can find Troops and all of his crew over there. Troops' crew. I just got a really bad picture in my head. Yeah, can you think of any other fun channels you might want to point out to our listeners?
The only ones that I think it's so important that I mention it again is Freenode is a great place if you have a very specific question. Because usually a lot of, like you were saying, the open source software projects have their channels on Freenode. So, you know, hey, try joining the channel, the join channel. Let's say you're having a question with Asterix. Try joining channel Asterix on whatever server you're on. It might not be the main channel, but it might just be a couple of guys that are all Asterix fans. So, you know, if you have a question and you're kind of looking for, there's usually only so much you can Google. If you're having a very specific problem, try joining the name of whatever it is you're going after or going to the people's website. And it's a great medium for people to be able to have a conversation in real time, you know, using something like Pastebin on the side where you can paste little snippets of code. It's really, it's a many-to-many communications protocol. You have a lot of people who can reach in and try to give you a hand with exactly what you're doing. So really,
I believe Pound Asterisk is on Freenode, just to sort of toss it out.
Oh, is it on Freenode? Okay, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think it's on Freenode.
But, I mean, go for it. You know, you can always find, you know, it's a worldwide thing. There's always somebody online somewhere.
Just think it's always happy hour in some place.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yep. Oh, all right. I don't think we have any announcements this week, so we'll just sort of gloss over that. Do you have any shout-outs?
We don't have BinRev meetings this week. This next week, right?
I have no clue. I don't have a BinRev meeting yet.
Yeah, it is next week. Next week, never mind. So next week, make sure you check out your BinRev meetings. BinRev 561 is going to be going on. We have a group of new people who are going to be putting together a presentation. So anybody who's in the 561 area, we meet at the Panera Bread on Yamato and roughly Federal Highway. You can check out 561.binrevmeetings.com if you need to see a map. And, come on out. It should be a good time.
And Fink is actually setting up 407.binrevmeetings.com. Find all the details there. He never actually gave me any of them. But check it out, and he'll be there, hopefully, I think, because he's actually the one setting it up. So be there or be square. Shouts?
I want to give a big shout-out to Black Ratchet. He's definitely the man. And, shouts to Biz and to Katie and Stank Dog and all the DDP and moderators and everybody who I can give a shout out to. Shouts, what's up? How you doing?
Yeah, okay. Well, just shouts to everybody. I will send shouts out to you, Zygmunt, because you go above and beyond the call of duty every week, dealing with all the call screening and just sitting there and listening to that bloody hold music.
I like that.
I am not envious of you. Well, I guess you can kind of get into it after a while.
Yeah, after like the first hour, it's banging.
So, this wraps up another episode of Binary Revolution Radio. Actually, I'd like to just sort of apologize for me, because I don't have a landline yet. You're listening to me over on my cell phone on GSM. So if there's any horrible quality during the radio show, this will be because of it. So, email, radio@binrev.com. I think that's the only thing. We're going off ghetto show notes this week because my show notes template is on a computer that's not set up yet. We will, as always, we will be here. See you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.